The three stand statements concerning the self are harder to learn than the earlier three elements of stance about the world. There's a fourth one. I am capable of finding a better model. While one may believe that being an optimistic model seeker is superior and want desperately to be one, the desire does not automatically produce a desired outcome. I want to be an optimistic model seeker. It's very nice to say. It's outside me. It's a concept. But I've got to be that. So to be that, I have to adopt certain things. It's easily said than done, in other words. In truth, experience is the best teacher of these components of stance, because only through experience do we gain confidence that statements are indeed true. I have to live it. I have to walk my talk. And when I'm walking my talk, my existing factory setting have to be, I have to unlearn that and relearn this. In a behavior in which I've invested for so many years, which is working, of course in a limited way, when I'm trying to come out of it, there'll be a lot of resistance from within me. And a quick justification, if this fails, then I go back to the old behavior. It's very simple. That's how human beings are. Right? Now, through experience, do we gain skill and confidence that we can find the better model to handle complexity and be patient with ourselves? Still, we can reflect on how we think consciously and systematically. Through reflection, we learn to explore the thinking that goes into our decisions. A decision I have taken, an outcome has come, then I need to ask myself a question. What thinking made me go through that action? Once I get that path, then I know what goes into the take decisions. If it's not working out well, then I know to reverse it back. It's the same thing like what we said earlier. We talk about the stance you take, then the tools and the experience. Decision leads to an experience. That experience is an outcome. That experience may be favorable or not favorable. So I work backwards. Then I have to go back to my thinking process, which is the stance. We learn to analyze models underlying our decision to determine what was salient and what causal relationships were inferred. I am capable of finding a better model. In that we do, right? Then we come to know whether we considered the problem as a whole when we designed the solution, or we got lost in emphasizing some detail. You know, we spoke about specialization and simplification in the earlier chapter. Now, when we specialize and we simplify, what happens is we start seeing the smaller picture. Specialization goes to the depth. It remains in the depth. Simplification goes to the breadth, and one of the components, it starts focusing only on that. Now, if I want to say to myself, I am capable of finding a better model, I need to come out of that stuck situation. While I'm handling one simplified component of a larger picture, while I'm into a specialization of a larger picture of one of the simplified components, while I'm into that, I also see the larger picture. How this work of mine is affecting the larger picture. Now, when I have this type of a thought process, then this makes sense to me that I am capable of finding a better model. If I'm in a stuck situation, this thought will never come to me. This thought will remain only as an intellectual thought. You won't experiment it through experience. Right? I am capable of finding a better model continues. We must be explicit in advance about the thought process preceding the decision. What's happening before the decision? What thought is coming to me? For better or for worse, the mind has an almost infinite capacity for rationalizing after the fact. Everybody does this. You do an act, and after the act is over, you get an outcome. And what we do is that outcome we try to justify. We try to justify. And we'll justify in such a way that we'll make an investment out of it and tell people, this is the best that has happened. Now you don't tell me what better I can do. Now this is nothing but the contented model defense. Absolutely, very much that. Right? If our decisions proves wrong, we totally forget thoughts that lead to the wrong decision. Don't we do that? And instead convince ourselves that the unanticipated outcomes in fact were what we expected all along. I have to go from place A to place B. There was a morcha and there was some roadblock. So I reached there late. So when I reached there late, I'm blaming the morcha, I'm blaming the roadblock. Okay? It may not be always that thing. If I really decide to go to that place, I'll still make it. Okay? You can defeat this rationalizing mechanism by writing down the thinking that leads to the decision and outcome we expect. underline writing down. Very few of us write down what we thought before a decision. In the planning process, we only make the plan. But do we write down what is the thought behind the plan? Consider this. If you write down the thought behind the plan, you will have immense amount of insights into how you think. Many of us do not know how we think. If I know how I think, it becomes easier for me to know why I say what I say. And when I know that this thinking is making me say what I say, I can be very clear about the outcome that I'm getting out of it. If my outcome is not favorable, I have to simply go back to my thinking process. If I write down my thinking process, it's an amazing thing to happen. Some people do it, I've seen it. Not many do it. Writing down your thought process before a decision making at the time of planning is a beautiful tool to understand this. Okay? It's fairly simple matter to compare actual outcome with against our recorded expectations. This is exactly what I was talking about. This disparity, the disparity or the disconnect or the gap, and there is bound to be some offers us valuable glimpse into our own thought process and our characteristics errors which are, we must admit, the product of our stance. Let's look at an exercise to practice optimistic model seeking. Okay? Let's say if I can give an example in this case, I have a thinking process. I plan something. I wanted to meet my friend XYZ on Sunday, and today is, let us say, Tuesday. I got about 5 days to plan, and he is staying in a place where to reach that place I need to change two transports. One, I have to go by train and then by bus or maybe by rickshaw or whatever, a little away. Now to go to the place, I plan. Now when I plan, I put a roadmap and the timeline, etc. If I do that, now while I'm doing that, there'll be thoughts coming to me. I have to meet this person XYZ. It is Tuesday evening. I'm sitting down and planning. The thoughts that come in my mind trigger the planning process on the paper. Now, if I write down those thoughts, then I know under what thinking ambience this plan was made. And when I go along on Sunday to meet him, if things are not working out the way I planned, then I have to go back to the thinking. What is it that I did? What thinking did I do when I did the planning which made this happen? So next time either he or another friend calls me, I know that thinking is something that I need to re-look into. This is a little deep. Not everybody will be able to cultivate it. This requires some training and some coaching. When you do that, you know how your thoughts are going haywire. Lots of people achieve lots of things, but every time when they achieve something, the thoughts are not consistent. They are very, very haywire. When I say haywire, I mean they do not realize what thoughts made the plans and the actions. Okay? So let's see this. One exercise to practice optimistic model seeking is to select a dilemma that features opposite models. A typical dilemma before the HR specialist was whether to centralize their corporation's training and development globally or to distribute it whether by regions or by business units. An organization, HR, should be centralized or should it be decentralized in terms of training and development, right? The group was asked to reverse engineer the logic of both competing models. The group had to trace the logical audit trail from salient data to causal relationships to architecture of the models to its conclusions. So what did they do? But the exercise was to be conducted by tracing backwards from conclusions to salient data. By taking the time to consider what would have been true for the model to be valid rather than what they think is true. One group of HR people will say that this is working, so this is the best model, and they'll just come to a conclusion. Don't centralize. Keep it decentralized. Another group will say decentralized has been working, so it's okay. That's a factory setting. So in this case, what did they do? They said, by taking the time to consider what would have been true, what would have to be true for the model to be valid, rather than what they think is true. They gain practice in not rushing to confirm or disconfirm the veracity of one model over the other. They get a chance to see the whole picture. The reverse engineering exercise of the HR group revealed that centralized model, if it's a centralized model, needs of the various regions and units have to be fairly similar. Is it true in most cases? When I say needs, means as a trainer, I can tell you, if there's a company located in Mumbai, it's got branches in different parts of the country, the training needs of each of the branch will be different. We all know it. The content training is same. If you're talking about, say, software programming, that is same. But there are other issues which are regional and local to the place, right? Central unit must have a good understanding of various regional complexities, of the needs of each region despite its physical and cultural distance from the region. The central unit must gain buy-in from the key actors in this region. It could be a bank, maybe a nationalized bank. I don't mean it in real terms, but what I'm saying is it's possible that a very large bank is centralizing its training and development programs in one location. It's sort of putting the paradigm of one glove fits all and gives the same training to all the regions. It may not work. I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying it may not work. When I take a centralized model, this is what is the outcome of it. This is what is the understanding. This is what is the information that I can gather. Now, if I go for a distributed model or a decentralized model, individual centers must be cost effective without global scale, which means instead of having a centralized training department in one city and then, you know, administer the training everywhere or bring them here, I have separate training centers for each region separately, decentralized. When I do that, every individual center must be cost effective without global scale. Sufficiently consistent in training across a firm. In some one region, there will be less training. In another region, there may be more training. Okay? Close enough contact with the corporate HR. They must be having that one-to-one with them. Focus on firm-wide needs and priorities. Firm-wide means it's about what the company wants, not what the region alone wants. These are the salient parts of distributed model. Now, taking it further, participants in the exercise were asked to marshal two sorts of data. One that would confirm the model and the other that will confirm the model. Suppose group A and group B is allocated. Group A is told, you discuss about the centralized model. Group B is told, discuss about the distributed model. Group A is told, you not only put the positives of the centralized model, you also come out with the negatives of the centralized model. Same thing is told to the group B also. This is what they are asked to do. So seeking out disconfirming or undermining data was crucial to the exercise, because participants were not to slip into contented model defense. They had to think differently. And thinking differently for a person who's already set in his job is quite challenging. In my own leadership training, I come across people, it takes a lot of effort to make them understand certain aspects of a very minor change, because they are so much successful and they are so much into wherever they are, that shifting even a little degree here is quite challenging for them. Making them do this exercise will actually open up to them by themselves that, hey, this model is also there which I have not thought of, which perhaps I've given up long back. It's possible. As expected, at the end of the exercise, none of the models was found to be perfect, because everybody came from a factory setting. Regions would find the central units inflexible and would not buy it, while distributed units would not be consistent. This was expected. The regional people will say that model is humbug, and the centralized people will say this model is expensive, it doesn't serve the purpose. Why? Because both the groups were into that factory setting thinking. Right? Together, participants in the exercise worked as an integrative solution to the training dilemma. They came together, and then it was decided that the centralized training unit would create training content platforms, it's an IT terminology, and regions would then efficiently build custom application on top of those platforms. Very simple customization. Centralized training module, the software is ready, And the software is not taken as it is administered as a delivery, as a training procedure that is customized to the region. For example, if there's an IT training to be done in, let's say, in South, I'm just giving an example, not to be taken literally. And let's say that the audience needs to be talked about in Tamil, Malayalam, or whatever southern language, then you can talk in that flexibility is given to you to serve the purpose. So the software is constant, but the way it delivered can be regionally adaptable. This is integration. The global platforms would ensure consistency and capture economies of scale, and local applications would ensure that the training was right for the regions and provide the ownership so crucial to the success of the program. Right? In absence of reverse engineering approach, participants would not have arrived at this apparently simplistic model. They would have continued to be in the contended model defense mode. They would have looked only at the data that supported their model and missed data that they didn't favor the model. Very obvious. And they would have seen the advantages of the model and not those of the other. Also, they would have focused on the shortcomings of the other and missed out on the models, even become critical about the other model. Right? So, by shifting to optimistic model seeking, the group was able to analyze the opposing models dispassionately without using their own emotions. They were very objective and gained the insight needed to devise a new model. The discovery of new and better model gave it confidence not only that there was a better model out there, but that they were fully capable of finding it. They got the optimism. They said, nah, it's possible. We can get some model. Right now it is not visible, but it's there. It is like believing in something which is not visible, and when you start believing in it, it manifests itself. Somewhere it is hiding. You can see it only after your belief comes in. Right? The fifth one now I'm discussing, I can wade into and get through necessary complexity. To build the confidence and skill in wading through the complexity to get to the other side, we can use modified version of the reverse engineering. Here, we ask participants to build backward from outcomes to the actions that produce the outcomes to the thinking behind those actions. We call the sequence TAO, thinking, actions, outcome, TAO. So we tell them, this outcome has come. Now in this outcome is a result of what actions? Ask yourself questions. These actions have come from what thinking? Ask this question. So when you do this, you will be able to get in touch with the amount of complexity or the lack of it that was happening at the time of your thinking process. The participants are formed into 8 teams or companies, and they have to operate in 4 regions for 4 years, all starting from the same position. So everybody, all the 8 teams start from the same position, and they make a product, decide volumes, advertisement spend, R&D investment, prices, etc. It's a mock. It's a mock of a training, right? Computer simulation runs the algorithms to determine the outcomes, and teams realize that their choices are dependent on some degree on the choices of other teams, right? Things never turn as students expected. A particularly unexpected outcome is selected, and participants have to find out what actions lead to that outcome and what was the thinking behind the actions. Where they did miss some salient data or overlooked a crucial causal connection. What they do is, these people are there, and the 8 teams are given this particular scenario, and the outcome is generated, and the outcome is given to all of them, and they said this outcome is a result of what action? They have to figure out, and this action is an outcome of what thinking? It's a reverse engineering in action for this particular habit, for this particular behavior, right? And one team was very disappointed at poor sales after it increased the profit margin, while the other teams in the effort to increase their market share had offered discounts. A classical failure to read the market. Now, this requires detailed explanation. I'll just put it in a very short form. It's very simple. I give you a scenario. I give scenarios to say 5 or 8 teams, as you are saying here. Each team is given an outcome. Let's say I talk about a stock market scenario. I tell each team, like each of you, I'm giving you say 1 crore rupees. Now team A has invested one, all of them start on the same day at the same time, the stock market, the bell rings. And then what happens? They started it and then I tell them that this is the outcome of team A at the end of the day, 3 o'clock. Team B, this is the outcome. You got so much profit, so much losses, so much profit, so much losses. This is the outcome I give them. I tell them, starting you had 1 crore with you. This is the outcome of team A. How come that outcome of team A has happened that way? They have to ask themselves question reverse. They have not actually done any action, but they have to ask, if this outcome comes, what could be the possible actions behind it? And if these actions are coming, what could be the possible thoughts behind it? It's a brainstorming. And it creates a lot of sound and fury, possibility thinking, out-of-box thinking and action. So many things it creates, right? So this is what it is all about. All participants learn 3 things quickly. People don't think about thinking process. People don't think about thinking process much. Thinking about thinking, reflecting is very hard for many people. People have to struggle to put thinking, action, outcome to chain together. People know this, but this is something that is a rigor. Rigor means you have to do it consciously with a lot of discipline. And it takes time initially. But once you practice it, it becomes easier. Typically, outcomes just occur, and those responsible for actions that triggered them quickly forget what they did. It's true everywhere. Operations people do this. Marketing people do this. Many places people are into actions and outcomes. They are not in touch with what thinking made it happen. If working backwards from outcomes to actions is difficult, delving one level further back to the thinking process that produced the action is harder. Exercises compel participants to learn that systematically reflecting on how they think is a powerful way to change how they think. They were actually made to realize that this is a very important tool. The last exercise was carried out with different teams, and they were asked to choose a location for their plant which they can't alter later, but they can expand capacity at the chosen site. Taking it further, Group A was shocked to see at the end of the exercise that the Group B had cumulatively achieved profits that were twice of Group A. The Group A had all 8 teams locate that plant in the North America, the biggest market with the most favorable average shipping cost to the other 3 regions. Group B had 4 teams locate the plants in North America, 3 teams in Europe and 1 in Asia. This is the way they operated. Now, brutal head-to-head competition had all but wiped out Group A profits in North America, while the Group B had a productive mix of choices that helped it score in the game. Group A admitted that it had not even considered competitive consequences of their choices. Only when it was presented with suboptimal profits earned, the Group A was motivated to explore its thinking and the actions that were product of their thinking. I want you to go through this once again. When you go through this particular small case that has been given here, it needs a lot of explaining, right? I'm only giving you a thought process about how through a brainstorming, people actually brought about certain thinking process. And they said that a certain type of thinking and action and outcome was predicted to doom. They said this will not work. And a certain type of actions and outcomes that came, they thought the thinking is not proper. But it came out to be a surprise that outcome, which was actually expected to flop, turned out to be very well. The point I'm emphasizing here is, do not look at outcomes and actions and get carried away by the thinking process. The outcomes and actions may be pretty successful, inverted commas, but the thoughts behind that may not be very fertile. If the thoughts behind that is not fertile, if they're very rigid or very narrow, you may have a problem. Right? Perhaps the single toughest aspect, that's the 6th one we're talking about, I give myself time to create a better model. The single toughest aspect of stance to learn is the element of patience. Patience is a virtue seldom found in women, never found in men, some assert. This is just a saying. I don't want to dwell upon it. We'll get into a gender bender or gender bashing. The only way to learn a patient stance is to experience unsatisfactory results. When things are not working out my way, I need to pause. I need to go through it. I need to have the patience to say that there's a better model emerging and keep myself open. So the only way to learn a patient stance is to experience unsatisfactory results of not giving ourselves enough time. After the participants systematically reflected on their own thinking, did they show slowly and suddenly acquire the taste to wade into complexity fearlessly and allow themselves the time to create a better model in that particular case, that small session that was taken. Ability will need experience. If I want to develop an ability to do something, I need to go through experiences. Experiences, some of them will give results, some of them may not give results, but I need to stay tuned, right? But the exercise helped lay foundation for a stance more than that of an integrative thinker. By exploring their own thinking, they got a taste of complexity, and by understanding the flawed thinking behind the unsatisfactory outcomes they produce, they discovered why it was worth the mental and emotional effort required to accept complexity and take time to forge a creative resolution. Right? Now, before I read out the summary, we have come to the end of it. I'll give you one example which comes to my mind as I'm talking. A certain family needs to have a bigger accommodation, bigger flat. So they go along and scout for the flat, and they're a family of say 4 or 5 members, and they need a bigger flat and a bigger apartment, and they go and scout for it. They act upon it, action. And when they act upon it, they buy an apartment in some location which they think, they perhaps thought, inverted commas, is good. The outcome is that they go and live in the place and they find that that is not the place they want to be. After staying there for some time, they realize, oh my God, what are we doing here? They start feeling very bad about it. They feel desperate. They feel that we want to get out of this place. They acted. They got an outcome. Did anybody went along to ask themselves, what thoughts made us buy a flat here? Was it a thought of desperation? Was it thoughts about something which they thought is there but they didn't verify? Now, this is an example. This is something I've noticed with some people. They take an action of buying something like an apartment or an office or an asset. They take the action and the outcome comes. Buying a simple thing like a cell phone, a mobile. You buy it, you take an action, the outcome comes, and then you say, oh my God, I don't like it, because the thinking behind that was not analyzed by you. Now, there are other side of the coin, other side of the spectrum. Too much of thinking, only thoughts, no actions, no outcomes. Too much of thinking, rigid thinking, it should be this way. When the actions and the outcome come, they are frustrated because, again, rigid thinking. Some people are oblivious about their thinking process that lead to actions and outcomes. Others, they think a lot with actions and outcomes on which they further get critical. These two are two extremes. Think about what leads to actions. Think about the thinking that leads to actions. Think about the actions and the outcomes. And when the outcomes are not favorable, go back and ask yourself, what should I have thought of? That goes back to salience. Salience will become more and more powerful. You'll start giving importance to many things which you never thought of giving importance. Okay? So now the summary I'm going to read out. The integrative thinkers are a varied lot, but their stances have 6 common features. 3 concern the world around them, 3 concern their role in it. Existing models do not represent reality, they are our constructions. Opposing models are to be leveraged, not feared. Existing models are not perfect, better models exist that are not yet seen. I am capable of finding a better model. I can wade into and get through the necessary complexity. I can give myself the time to create a better model. These are the 6 different types of stances which we can take. And at the end of the day, I'd like to thank you for listening to me patiently. Wish you all the best and happy journey in the construction project.